bonus into the DeCesare Group Podcast. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare, and I'm glad you're here. You know, every other week we drop a brand new episode of the podcast highlighting business and economic development news in South Central Kentucky. We also have a very popular companion newsletter that comes out every week that keeps you in the know about the business and economic news affecting our community. You can go to our website, thedecesaregroup.com, and sign up to have the newsletter come straight to your email every Monday morning. And if you like the DeCesare Group Podcast, please tell your friends. You can subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, and even YouTube. All right, our guest this week is going to bring us some updates on the state of the Commonwealth. Mike Wilson currently serves as state senator for District 32, which includes Warren, Simpson, Logan, and Todd counties. He is the Senate Majority Whip, serving in the Senate leadership. Mike serves on several committees and subcommittees in the Senate, such as education, economic development, tourism, and labor, veterans, military affairs, and public protection and transportation, just to name a few. Mike was also my roommate in Frankfort for 8 years, so it's about time I had him on the podcast. Here's my conversation with State Senator Mike Wilson. Mike Wilson, welcome to the DeCesare Group Podcast.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here, my old roommate.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. It's about time you've been on the podcast, too.
I know.
I know. We ran into each other a couple months ago, and I said, you've been on the podcast? You're like, no, I haven't been on the podcast. And I'm like, oh, golly, that's
I thought
my
you were
bad.
Mad at me or something.
No, I'm not. Anyhow, but I think the timing is right as we head into getting ready for session in the latter months of the year. And, you know, some of the biggest changes in the history of Kentucky as far as legislative changes have happened in the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And, talk a little bit about what's been going on up there in Frankfort that is making things so much better.
Well, I think it'd have to go back to 2017 when we had flipped the House and you guys came into the majority.
I remember that.
And, that's when I think the fiscal responsibility that we have exercised and the fiscal discipline that we've exercised in our budgeting began to take place. And, of course, there are a couple of landmark things that happened. Legislation that you, my friend, were involved in.
Yeah, a couple.
Yeah, right to work.
Right to work.
Yeah.
And repeal of the prevailing wage.
Yes, those two that really opened us up and said, Kentucky is open for business.
Yeah.
And we began to get a lot more people looking at Kentucky, and we had some great announcements with companies coming here. But for us, the budget was really a big deal.
Yeah.
And we began to exercise that fiscal restraint and responsibility to the point that just a couple of years ago, we were able to save. Like when you and I came in, we didn't have any money.
Oh, yeah. Broke as a joke.
And you remember we were sweeping funds and, the budget itself was structurally imbalanced.
Yep.
And so we, really
wasn't. We had a pension crisis.
Pension crisis, yes. And we were probably 2 to 3 years away from having to pay as you go.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible time, in a sense, to be there. But it was a great time, too, because we began to cut taxes. And everybody says, you need more money, you need more money. Well, Ronald Reagan proved it.
Yeah.
He cut taxes. And when you get more of your money that you get to keep, what do you do with it?
You spend it.
You spend it. That's right. And our revenues kept going up and up and up, and we began to save money in our rainy day fund. I know I'm not supposed to call it the rainy day fund. It's a budget reserve trust fund.
Yeah, okay. Well, but everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
When you say rainy day fund, we know what you mean, but technically it's the budget reserve trust fund.
That's right. And we had over $5 billion in that, and we were able to do a separate bill that was House Bill 1 and put a lot of money into infrastructure all across the state. $450 million went into roads in high-growth areas, which we're a high-growth area here. And those things have been happening. And we spent $2.8 billion out of the rainy day fund. And now we still have about almost $4 billion in there.
And that's nice to have because one of the things we're hearing a lot about is Medicaid costs.
Yes.
And, you know, some of that cost comes back to the state.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that, because I don't think people understand how that works. You know, you hear that Congressman Guthrie's cut Medicaid. He really didn't cut it. They just didn't increase the funding at the levels they wanted.
That's right.
That's the truth behind the story there. But talk about how that impacts the state budget as well.
Well, people don't realize there are two types of Medicaid.
Yeah.
You have the regular Medicaid, which is for your people that, you know, they are older, they can't work, you know, they have disabilities or different things like that.
Yep.
That hasn't changed. None of that's changed. But the federal government covers like 70% of the cost of that. Mm-hmm. We have to pick up 30% of the cost.
Right.
And then there's the Medicaid expansion, and that's supposed to be the working poor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be working.
Yeah.
But a lot of people on it that are not working. And basically, the federal government covers 90% of that, and we have to cover 10%. That's the part that's changing.
Okay.
That's the part that it says that if you're not going to work, you can't have the Medicaid. And so that is for those that actually have the ability to work. And if you have the ability to work, and you can't afford it, you're at a certain level, then you'll qualify for it.
Yeah.
You know.
So what is the what's the financial impact of something like that? I mean, I'm sure it's pretty large.
I think when I came in, you and I were there, we might have been spending, counting federal dollars, somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's about $20
billion. Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, the expansion and everything that is there. And so for us, if the federal government cut that money and we still had to have people that are qualified for it, mm-hmm. put into it, it could make a significant impact on our budget.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Congressman Guthrie for what he did.
Yeah.
He preserved the regular and the funding for the regular. It's just the other. And I think that we can take care of that.
Yeah. I've talked about this before. You know, we are just now, in the last couple of months, getting back to where our participation rate is where it was before the pandemic.
Wow.
And so that's people working, able-bodied people that are in the mm-hmm. workforce. It's been in the mid-50s. It's almost, it's like 58, 59% right now, you know, mm-hmm. and it's still mm-hmm. too low.
Yeah.
And what we have learned and through talking with different economists and whatnot is that There's a segment of individuals that have not got back into the workforce yet,
right.
and that's 18
right.
to 35 year old males.
Yes,
and a majority of them are living with a parent or a grandparent mm-hmm. or something, and the basement dwellers. No,
yeah.
just call it like it is.
Basement dwellers and video game players.
And it's funny you say that, because of that group, a large majority of them are playing video games. There are studies that show this.
Yeah.
And of that group that are playing video games, only 10% are able to monetize it in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
So basically, they're sitting in their mom's basement playing video games, not working, and probably on Medicaid,
yes.
probably collecting a check somewhere when they really should be getting engaged into the workforce. And,
right.
And so that's a systemic problem that we got to mm-hmm, work on. And then, mm-hmm. you know, obviously we have a child care problem,
right?
You know, because we have women leaving the workforce
right.
to stay home and take care of their kids. And there's some good things happening out there to help
right.
solve that problem. And it's not something you can solve legislatively, really.
No.
And a lot of people think you can.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we're talking about pre-K for all universal pre-K, mm-hmm. There's no way that as a state that we really can afford that.
Yeah.
I mean, people think that's a great idea, but from the standpoint, we don't have the infrastructure in our schools to take care of that. And I'm more of a fan that I think, you know, what I've seen is, why don't we do something to incentivize, you know, the private industry and especially companies to
yeah.
have a daycare. You know, I think that would be more of a solution than anything else.
Or, you know, provide a supplement for daycare or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different things that could be done. And,
yeah,
the problem is not having available daycare. It's the mm-hmm. cost of daycare.
That is right. It is the cost of daycare.
we talked a little bit about the pension. I mean, we just mentioned it in passing a few minutes ago, but give us an update on the pension systems, because, you know, there have been some systemic changes with those as well. And you're getting to the point now where a lot of those people that were in the original pension system, they're slowly retiring.
Right.
There are fewer people there. So that helps with the bottom line.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, and I serve on the PPOB, which is Public Pension Oversight Board, and we meet every month, and all of the pension systems come before us and update us on where they're at. And the returns that are happening right now in their investments are great. And we have funded the pension system. If I go back to 2013, and you remember.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, when we changed it where we had to fully fund the pensions from that point on. And we knew we changed it also for the cash balance system. We created a whole new system that was portable. They could actually take it with them. And that was a great decision, but we knew that it was going to continue to go down before it went back up.
Right.
And we've hit that, where we've hit the bottom, and now we're headed back up for the funding for that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood about 15 to 16% funded. That's a far cry from 3% funded.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot better.
Yeah, and so that's the regular KRS, but then the KTRS teachers, we only are supposed to fund 13% of payroll. But that's not enough to fund that system.
Yeah.
You know, the board actually enhanced it without our approval. And so now we are putting in close to $1 billion a year into that retirement system. And so we have done that by voluntarily doing that as legislature.
Yeah.
Not by statute, but that is something that we're going to take care of those folks.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. And the main thing is that when they retire, that money will be there.
It's going to be there. Yeah. Exactly right.
And so that's what's most important. But without some of those other changes with new hires and things like that,
right,
that would have been possible.
That's correct.
All right. Let's see. What else? Anything else we need to talk about on the budget? Because I want to talk about some other stuff as well.
No, that's fine. That's right. Fine. We're going to be – this is a budget year.
Yeah, coming up.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of prep going
on. I'll be stopping by your office.
Yeah. We'll be getting numbers in December, final numbers, and let us know. And, you know, we were a little bit above budget this time when we closed the books, but not enough to actually hit our trigger for 2028. So.
Well, let's talk about one more thing. You talked about lowering taxes. Talk about the income tax, because that has slowly been going down as well.
Yeah, since I've been there, it was income tax was 6%, and we lowered it to 5%, and then we created like a formula that said we could cut it by half a point every year if we reached certain triggers within our budgeting system. And we've been able to do that, and come January the 1st, our income tax will go down to 3.5%.
That's fantastic.
You know, it is.
So are those same triggers, could it go back up?
No.
Okay.
It could not.
So once it goes down, it's down.
It's down, it's down. Woo! That's right. We might not hit the triggers, we can't take it down any further, but we actually passed another bill that said, in a couple of years, we could take it down by a tenth of a point.
Okay.
So
is the ultimate goal to get it to zero?
Yeah. But, we're already competitive with Tennessee at 3.5.
Well, we are, because of their 9% sales tax that they have. And then, that some communities there have an extra 1% or more on the, so you could pay upwards of 10% sales tax there.
Right. And they also tax groceries and medicine.
And their property taxes are a lot higher.
That's right.
And, it just costs more to live there. And we're seeing the advantages, as my role as economic developer in Simpson County, we're seeing, even here in Bowling Green where I live, a lot of Tennessee license plates in the houses now.
Yeah.
And it's because it's just cost less to live here, but you get the same quality of life.
Exactly.
And they can drive an extra 20 minutes to get to work or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, good job there. All right. You're the Senate Majority Whip, so you're the guy that counts the votes.
But that's right.
What's unique is that, when the census came out in 2020, and you have to do the redistricting every 10 years. Warren County came out really good.
Yeah,
South Central Kentucky came out really good.
Yes.
You know, because now there are three of the five members of leadership represent portions of Warren County in the Senate.
That's correct, yeah.
So you have Senator Max Wise, who's the floor leader.
Floor leader.
David Givens, who is Senate President Pro Tem.
Yep.
And then you as Senate Majority Whip. Talk about the impact that has on this region.
Well, I can tell you that the impact that that has is, you know, I live here in Warren County in Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. Those guys live in Greene County and over in Taylor County, but, you know, they really love Warren County, you know. I know David Givens went to WKU. He's a big fan of WKU and Bowling Green. And then Max Wise, I mean, that guy is all over the state.
Yeah.
I mean, I just see him everywhere. It's, you know, he's like Ricochet Rabbit or something.
Yeah.
But he loves Bowling Green, you know, loves coming down here. And so the difference that it makes is when you have three people that care about this community that are in leadership, whenever something affects this area, specifically the budget, those three guys, and I'm one of them, mm-hmm. we're all in the final negotiations of the budget. So if there's something that affects our district, I can pretty much guarantee you it's going to get done.
Yeah. So, and, it, you know, having three of the, what, 16 people
yep.
at the table.
Yep.
I mean, three main ones from one county, that's not –
That's pretty heavy hitting.
It's heavy hitting. It doesn't always happen that way. I think
yeah.
it's 16 people, right?
Well,
it's 10 in leadership, 3, 16, and then usually one or two rank and file members. So
yeah,
something yeah. like that.
Something like that. We definitely, our community punches way above its weight.
Yeah, and then, of course, you have Michael Meredith, who is the chairman of banking and insurance.
That's correct.
Sean McPherson, I believe he's a subcommittee chair now. I mm-hmm. can't remember which one. And, of course, Steve Riley and Kevin Jackson.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's great representation.
Yeah,
here.
We've got a great community. And then Jason Petrie, who's next door,
yes.
Who's the chair of the budget committee.
That's right.
So – this area is well represented in some key roles.
And Jason Petrie, before redistricting, had a little piece of Warren County.
He did.
But he still has Logan County and Todd County where he lives. Mm-hmm. And, of course, those are two counties in my district. So I'm with him quite a bit.
Yeah, as Amy calls that, God's country.
That's right, I know.
But yeah, the point I'm trying to make is, and you've always heard Senator McConnell and others say that, you know, when you're in leadership, you have a seat at the table.
That's right.
And you're part of the decision-making process when it comes to doing things for your community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great thing that, you know, down here in South Central Kentucky, even when I was in the legislature, and it goes, and I, you know, when Jody Richards was Speaker of the House, we kind of, when it came to this area, of course, mm-hmm. we don't have any Democrats now representing
right.
this area, but when we did,
yeah.
you know, we all kind of worked together.
We did.
And still happening. And even in other parts of the state where they have, whether they're all the same party or not, they just don't have that kind of collaboration going on.
Yeah, people ask me, I mean, what is happening in Bowling Green? What's happening down there? And I say the secret sauce is that, you know, that we all work together with the city government, county government, and state government, and we have the Chamber of Commerce. And it's like this synergy that takes place
yeah.
here in this community. Nobody is butting heads with each other. We're all trying to work together. But you're right. You don't see that across the state.
Yeah. And I don't want to leave out, I mean, and part of that synergy includes WKU and Sky
yes.
CTC as well.
That's right.
Because,
that's right.
And our school districts, because there's just, it's just unusual.
It is. It
All
is.
Right. So y'all go back into session the first Tuesday after the first Monday in January. I think that's right.
I think you're right.
And it is the budget session. So
mm-hmm.
so you'll be up there for 60 working days.
That's correct.
You got to be complete with your work by April 15th, 2026.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what can we expect this coming session?
Well, you know, the policy that we do, the number one policy document is the budget. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I ever saw the budget. And it was like, I mean, huge, you know. We're going through these pages and all I'm reading is language.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where's the money? And then we got another stack that was all the money.
Yeah.
But all that language in there creates policy within the 2 years that you pass the budget.
Right.
And people don't understand that. It's a policy document. And so that's going to take up a major amount of effort and time for everybody there. And of course, there'll be other things that we'll be working on. I can tell you one specifically is Senate Bill 181. Mm-hmm. That was the one about teachers and, you know, volunteers communicating with students.
Oh, yeah.
Off the radar. And we're trying to put them on the radar to make sure there's no hidden communications taking place, because we've seen that happen.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible thing. But there are some...
there's some unintended consequences.
Unintended consequences, which there always are. Yep. And Lindsay Tishner is working on that. She's already receiving feedback, and she'll be doing an update on that bit.
I've even heard about that because I work with a couple of superintendents, and, you know, it's caused some problems. But I think the intent is good.
Yes.
You know, obviously, we want to make sure everything's on the up and up. But
that's right.
There's always – you can't always predict – the outcomes of, and sometimes right. You got to go back and make a technical correction.
That's right.
Or tweak.
Well, and also within the budget, there, you know, there's a lot of ask. People come and talk, and we have economic development issues that are happening that need a little money or a little infrastructure or different things like that. And so those will be getting a lot of attention too as well. And especially a lot of that won't really take place until the very end.
Yeah.
Right around April 15th.
Yeah. So why is that? I mean, when you and this is, you know, I think a legitimate question that people often ask is that, you know, you have super majorities in both chambers. Why is it always take up to the very last minute? Why can't you start earlier?
Well, we do start earlier,
yeah.
But you know how it goes. I mean, the governor, he recommends his budget, which we, you know, we look at it, but he cannot pass any kind of bills
right.
to make policy. He cannot appropriate any money. I mean, we look at it, but the House generally takes his budget, pushes it aside, and does their own budget. Mm-hmm. They have to pass that budget and satisfy all their members and send it to us. We don't ever agree with their budget because we take and we redo the budget and send them our version of the budget.
Right.
Well, they don't agree with that. And it just takes time. It's, you know, for that. And they send back and say, well, we can't agree with all your changes, so we're going to have a conference committee.
And so we still don't agree.
Then we appoint people to the conference committee, and all you can work on in a conference committee is the differences.
Yep.
And so pretty quickly we find out that we don't agree on the differences, so then we have to go to what we call free conference.
And that's the battle royal.
That's the battle royale. That's right, where we get into it and over all the issues and try to hammer everything out and say, okay, well, if you guys give on this, we'll give on that, you know,
yeah,
vice versa. And it's just, you got 138 personalities up there, and everybody wants something in the budget.
Sure.
And so that just takes time.
And I ask that question, and I will say this. I mean, now that there are super majorities in both chambers, it's usually not right up to the last hour like it has been in the past.
Not.
I mean, I was there when clocks were stopped.
I was never there. Let me say that.
I was there when the clock, of course, I wasn't in majority either, but I was there when all of a sudden the clock just stopped ticking. I'm like, well, that's interesting. It's 5 minutes to midnight for 30 minutes, you know? Which later came back, and we had to, you know, that there were some legal repercussions because of that. But I will say, you know, in the last few years, I think y'all have left a few days early at times.
Yes. It's not down to the wire like it used to be. And,
yeah.
We get done pretty much, and sometimes, like you said, a few days early.
Yeah.
We've got everything. We just need to make sure that we have it to the governor, because he has 10 days to either, you know, he's going to veto it or he's actually going to sign it. And he has line item veto on the budget.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's done up to 30, like, vetoes on our budget.
Or he can do nothing.
He can do nothing. He could let it go into law without his signature. Yeah. But
that's,
you know,
rare.
Yeah. We've overridden, I believe, almost every single one of his vetoes.
Yeah. You know, and that's a big difference from when I was there. Of course, we rarely overrode a veto.
Right.
Now, towards my first couple years, my 2 years in majority, we did.
Yeah.
But before that, I don't ever recall overriding a veto.
I don't think I ever recall that when Bashir was there either, Daddy Bashir.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing I've noticed is there are fewer special sessions.
Yes, that's right.
I think my first 10 years, we had at least one a year.
Yeah.
You know, so that's becoming more rare, which is a good thing because it costs a lot of money to go into session.
Right. Yeah, we had thought that the governor might call a special session, and we met with him over the disaster money where we were at. And after that meeting, we just looked at each other and said, there's no way they can spend all that money, and there's no need to call us in special session.
Yeah. All right, so back in redistricting, you mentioned this earlier, you picked up Simpson, Logan, and Todd counties, and now you have parts of Warren, where in the past you pretty much just represented Warren County.
That's right.
What kind of challenges has that presented, you know, going from one county to four?
Well, I can tell you, you know, that I drive a lot more
than
I used to, I guess.
Because it's a nice drive.
It is a beautiful drive, and I can get across my district within an hour.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that it takes them all day to get across their district. They got nine counties.
Yeah.
Because they're in the, you know, eastern Kentucky where the population's declining.
So how many people do you represent?
118,000 plus or minus
5%. Yeah.
That's what the statute says that we can have.
You represent 1/38th of the population.
That's right. There's 38 of us. You take the population, divide it by 38, and that gives you your number plus or minus. Because there's no way you're going to hit the exact number.
Right.
But I can tell you that in the census, Warren County came in, I think, about 135, right at 135,000.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's now about 140-something thousand.
Yeah.
It's growing really, really fast.
Yeah, and as you know, we had this BG 2050 project earlier this year. And, you know, we're expected to grow another 60, 70,000 people over the next few years. So,
yeah. Well, I love my new district, I have to tell you.
Well, what's not to love, man?
I know. Simpson County, we, you know, love going down there. And I mean, just love the square and everything. Just a small town feel.
Yeah. It's like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, exactly. And same, you know, Auburn, Russellville.
Yeah.
You know, Guthrie, you know, and Elkton. It's just wonderful. I love going over
there. Don't forget Adairville.
Adairville. Yeah, that's right. Or Lewisburg.
And Chaco. And yeah. I mean, you've got some of the best area in the country.
Oh,
and great farming area too,
because
I know you've got some farming in your background as well, and I know your son's a farmer down in Mississippi, right. You know, you've got Todd County and Logan, they're just phenomenal farm communities and rural communities, which means good people.
They're great people, and you know, I can tell you that farmers are hurting right now. They really are. Commodity prices are low. That really makes it hard to make a profit farming.
Yeah, and all those counties have good leadership too.
Yes, they do.
You know, so Judge Mansfield and Todd and Judge Baker and Logan and Judge Barnes in Simpson County and Gorman here in Warren County. So
yes, good leadership.
You got some great people to work with. All right, I was going to ask you something else. We're going to get down to some fun stuff here in just a few moments. Some fun stuff. Yeah, so Mike and I were roommates for 8 years. I've lived with you maybe third longest. Besides family. Longest non-family member I've lived with, that's for sure.
Yeah, Jim and I would solve all the problems every night. We had it all fixed until we go back in the next day.
There's a lot of truth to that. I mean, we could sit around and go, well, we could just do this. But, you know, again, you got 138 different personalities to deal with and getting them to buy into it. We knew we were right. And we didn't just the two of us live together at times. Sometimes there was four of us.
Yeah.
You know, depending on where we were staying that particular session. But a lot of fun. What's your favorite Jim DeCesare story that you can tell?
Oh, gosh, man. I need to think about that.
Yeah. All right. Never mind. Don't go there. All right. All right.
Now, you know, I just remember coming in, and you were going to college at that time.
Yeah, I was getting.
Yeah. And when I would get home, because I would, when I was in leadership and stuff like that, and, you know, there had been a time you were in leadership.
Yep.
And so we were both getting home late because of that. But when I would come home, and you would be there working on a project, either for your work. Or you'd be working on a class that you were taking.
Yeah, I was working on my. I think I was working on my master's at that time.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, but, I think so.
But yeah, it and was.
Occasionally, we did do the occasional smoke a cigar.
Well, yeah,
you know that kind of thing.
That still happens on a regular basis. But anyhow, what have been some of the most rewarding things that you've been a part of since you've been up here in Frankfort?
You know, I think that. It's probably not the major legislation, although I'm glad to be a part of that, and that's been rewarding. But it's when somebody calls you and they're having problems with whether it's unemployment or different things that the cabinet's supposed to be taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get the, you know, constituent services staff working on that and take care of a problem for them.
Yeah.
That's really rewarding for me. And, you know, being able to do like the citations and different things and recognize people's accomplishments, or if someone passed away that you know real well, you know, to give their family something like that, memorial citation. I guess it's, for me, it's always just interacting with people and helping people is the most rewarding part of it for me and my community. Being able to do things for my community is huge.
Yeah.
That's really huge.
So, finally, 2026 is a re-election year.
That's correct.
Is Mike Wilson running for re-election?
Mike Wilson is definitely running for re-election.
All right. There you go.
I'm out raising money and, you know, talking to people and making sure they know I'm running for re-election, and I'd appreciate their vote.
Fantastic. Well, you can count on mine. How about that? You got one.
All right. Thanks, All right. Jim.
Mike Wilson, thanks for being on the DeCesare Group podcast.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks again to State Senator Mike Wilson for being my guest today on the DeCesare Group podcast. If you like what you hear, share with a friend. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review and share your feedback with us. You can also follow the DeCesare Group across all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter, Soke Economic Development and Business News, by going to our website, thedecesaregroup.com. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a public relations and consulting firm based in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Our engineer and future state senator is Justin DeCesare, with content contributions from Brooke Mattingly. The DeCesare Group podcast is researched by Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, inviting you to join us again next time for the DeCesare Group podcast.